Good afternoon. Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the 2016 Chemical Data Reporting Walkthrough Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Chris Gorder, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, Tony. Good afternoon. My name is Chris. I'm an Environmental Protection Specialist in the Information Management Division within the Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention. I'd like to begin by thanking you for your participation in today's Chemical Data Reporting Outreach session. Please note that if you're experiencing difficulties viewing the presentation, please ensure that your Adobe add-ons are enabled as they're necessary to view the presentation. During today's presentation, we'll provide a quick overview of the 2016 CDR reporting requirements. The purpose of today's outreach is to provide you with a preview of the tools, so we'll not be dwelling on the reporting requirements to any extent or CDX registration. These subjects will be addressed in future outreach. We'll then walk you through the reporting tool, show you how to upload XML files and how to make amendments to already submitted Form U's, and provide you with information on the upcoming industry testing of the tool, and then we'll have a Q&A session at the end.
Okay, my name is Susan Sharkey, and I'm going to just walk you through the next three slides of the 2016 CDR requirements. As Chris mentioned, the purpose of this webinar is not to dwell on the specific requirements themselves, but to give you an overview of the reporting tool itself and some of the changes that we made since the 2012 CDR. So the reporting period begins June 1st and extends to September 30th of 2016. If you're a manufacturer, including an importer, of a TSCA inventory listed chemical substance, you need to consider whether you need to report or not. And reporting is required for chemicals with production volumes of 25,000 pounds or greater at a site, or for certain selected substances that are subject to TSCA actions, the production volume threshold is 2,500 pounds, and this is unless the chemicals are otherwise exempt. So the very things that are really important to know is that reporting is site-specific. That means that for each site, you complete one reporting form called Form U, and that one form has all of the chemicals that are required to be reported. Reporting is the reporting standard is known to or reasonably ascertainable by your company for all of the data. So this is a change from the past where we had different reporting standards for different types of information. You can claim any of the information on the form as confidential business information as long as it meets the requirements for that claim. There are a couple of data elements where upfront substantiation is required, and that's for the site and chemical identity CBI claims and any processing and use CBI claims. The electronic reporting form provides a way to do the upfront substantiation. Looking in more detail at the specific reporting requirements, for the manufacturing-related data, you identify what the chemical is that you're reporting, and you report that by CAS number and chemical name. If it's a CBI chemical, which means it's listed on the TSCA inventory of the TSCA confidential inventory, you report by accession number and generic chemical name. All of that information is listed in our SRS, the Substance Registry Services, which you can also go and access by going to www.epa.gov/SRS. For each of the chemical substances, you report the production volume for four different years. For the years 2012, 2013, and 2014, you report your total production volume only. For 2015, you break that production volume down into domestically manufactured and imported production volumes. And then there's a few other pieces of information that you report associated with the 2015 production volume. When you're looking at whether or not your chemical substance needs to be reported, you look at each of these years, and if in any one of the years, in 2012 or 2013 or 2014 or 2015, you meet either that 25,000 pound threshold or the 2,500 pound threshold, then you're required to report regardless of the production volume in the other years. For the additional data elements for manufacturing-related data, and again, these are reported only for the 2015 data, the number of workers that are reasonably likely to be exposed, the maximum concentration, an indication of whether the chemical substance is being recycled, remanufactured, reprocessed, or reused, the chemical's physical form or forms, and the percent production volume in each of the forms. You also report processing and use information, again, related to the 2015 production volume only. For the industrial processing and use, you report up to 10 unique combinations of industrial category, industrial section, sector, and functional use. When you combine, look at these three, it gives gives us an idea of an exposure scenario associated with that chemical. For each of those unique combinations, you provide the production volume, the number of reasonably likely to be exposed workers, and the number of sites, and all of those are provided in ranges. For commercial and consumer use, you report up to 10 of the unique product categories. You identify whether it's a commercial or a consumer use. If it's in a product intended for use by children, the percent production volume, the maximum concentration, and again, the number of reasonably likely to be exposed commercial workers.
So to access the form, the first thing you would need to do would be to register with EPA's Central Data Exchange. Registering with the Central Data Exchange, you need to register under your primary organization and then add each facility that you'd be submitting a Form F or a Form U for. You can also update your current registrations, as there will probably be many of you who are returning from previous reporting years, and update your current site information. Once you have your account complete and updated, then you'll be able to access the CDR application to complete your Form Us. And again, that's one Form U per site, and the application will provide step-by-step submission instructions.
Thanks. And next, we'll just do a demo of the CDR 2016 form. So first, when you log in, you'll be at the CDX homepage. You'll enter in your CDX login credentials, and then you'll click the login button. And then this takes you to the MyCDX page, and you can click the primary authorized official link for the Chemical Safety and Pesticide Programs program service. And then this takes you to the Chemical Information Submission System page, and you'll select TSCA Chemical Data Reporting CDR from the drop-down menu and click the OK button. And then this takes you to the CDR homepage, and you can click the Forms tab or link. And so then this takes you to the CDR Form U page. And then just a note that the sites that are displayed are the sites that have been associated with your CDX user ID, so it pulls from your CDX registration. And so on this page, you'll click the site link for the site that you want to provide information for. And if you've made any changes, like you've added any recent, any new sites, you can click the refresh formless button to refresh the page with any newly added or removed sites. And then you'll notice at the top you have some sort of like filter drop-down menus. You can sort by reporting year. You can search for a site, or you can search for a form by status. But by default, the current reporting year will be displayed. So we'll click the site link. And then this is a new form. You'll see the create passphrase screen. So you'll enter a new passphrase and confirm that passphrase and click the next button. And then just a note about the passphrase, just that you remember it and you don't lose it, because it can't be reset. It's not stored anywhere for security purposes. The passphrase basically serves to encrypt your form.
So if you do happen to lose your passphrase, you will lose your entire submission. It will still be on your form screen, but you'll need to provide us information to reset your form, and then you'll have to begin from scratch again.
Okay. So after you create your passphrase, click Next. And then this takes you to the Section 1.A parent company information page. And so you can enter in the Dun & Bradstreet number and then the county or parish value, and then click the Next button. And then this takes you to the Section 1.B site information page, where you'll enter in the site DMB number and a county or parish value, and you can click the Next button. And then just one note, based on comments that we've received, there have been some new features implemented into the CDR 2016 form, including the option to sort chemicals by date or time, which you can see is an option in the action bar, in the buttons in the action bar, in the lower left-hand side of the page. You can also search for a chemical using the drop-down menu that displays in the navigation tree. You also have the option to collapse the navigation tree or expand it. And then chemicals are sorted by category and number now. So after you enter in your site information, you click the Next button. And then this takes you to the Section 1.C Technical Contact Information page. And you can enter in your technical contact information, or you can click the Copy CDX Registration button to identify yourself as a technical contact.
And for the technical contacts, the technical contact is specific to a chemical, so if you have multiple chemicals at your site, you can have multiple technical contacts, or you can have one technical contact for the whole site.
Correct. And then after you're done entering one or more technical contacts, you can click the Next button. And then this takes you to the Section 2.A Chemical Identification page, and you can click the search button to generate the search SRS window and search for your chemical. So on the Substance Registry Services search window, you can enter in the Casoran of the chemical or the CA index name or other synonym and click the search button, and then you'll select the radio button of the chemical search result that displays and click the OK button. And then this populates your chemical onto your chemical identification page, and then you'll click the Next button. And then that takes you to the Section 2.B Manufacturing Information page. So you'll enter in your manufacturing information and your 2015 production volume values. And then one thing that we also added that was new is the way that CBI substantiation is done. So if you do mark something as CBI, what will happen is the pop-up window will generate and you will enter in the responses to your CBI substantiation questions So you can enter your responses, you can save them. If you want to change the answer, you just check the CBR checkbox again, and it will bring up the responses you previously entered, and you can edit anything. You can delete your responses, which will uncheck your CBI substantiation. But basically, it would just be managed from the page where you originally report CBI. And then on the manufacturing information page, you'll report, your physical forms, and then your production volumes for the past reporting years. And then you can click the next button. So then this takes you to the Section 3.A Industrial Processing and Use page. And so you can enter any industrial processing and use information that's applicable, or check the not applicable checkbox. Then you can click the next button once you're done. And then this takes you to the Section 3.B Consumer and Commercial Use page. So you can enter any consumer and commercial use information that's applicable, or check the not applicable checkbox. And we'll demonstrate this page in more detail in our live demo. We can show you how information is actually entered into these pages, which is through drop-down menus, and they contain different values. For now, once you do enter in the information, you click the next button, and so you'll be taken to your CBI substantiation summary page. So at this point, you can either validate your form, or you can click the submit icon in the bottom action bar to begin the process of submitting the form.
You could also, if you need to add more than one chemical, in the bottom left-hand corner, there are buttons to add additional chemicals or to join add joint chemicals, and that will create a new folder for each chemical.
Okay. Correct. And then for now, we'll just cover the submission process. So after you click the submit icon in the bottom action bar, this takes you to the submitting official information page. So you'll review the information that displays, and then check the legally responsible certification statement checkbox, and then click the next button. And then, so once your form validates, if it validates successfully, the application will start to create a PDF. If you do have errors in your form, then a validation window pops up with the errors within your form. You have to go back to your form and correct those before you can continue submission. So once your PDF finishes generating, then the PDF displays on the submission process PDF generation page. So you can click the View PDF button to either view the PDF, or you can click the Continue button to continue the process of submitting. And then, so if you continue, this takes you to the Chromair certification page. So you can click the I Certify button once you review the certification statement. And then this takes you to the Chromair login page. You can enter in the CDX password and then click the next button. And then this takes you to the Chromair security question screen, and you'll enter the answer to the 25-1 question that displays, and then you'll click the next button. And then this takes you to the Submit to CDX page, and then click the Confirm button. And then this takes you to the Chromair submission page, and you'll click Finish. And so then next, we'll review the process of actually downloading your copy of record and extracting the XML file. So once you do submit your form, you can navigate back to the forms page. And if you wanted to download the copy of record, you would click the copy of record icon, like the green arrow icon that displays in the copy of record column.
We recommend that you download and save your copy of record after every submission. CDX will only retain your last submission, so if you could unintentionally lose your first copy of record if you resubmit, and so we recommend that you save that off to your own system.
Right. Yeah. So then after you click the copy of record icon, this takes you to the enter passphrase screen. So you'll enter the passphrase to the form and click the next button. And then this takes you to the Chromera login page. So you'll enter in your CDX password and click the OK button. And then this takes you to the Chromera security question screen. So you'll enter the answer to the 25-1 question that displays and click the OK button. And then this takes you to a page where the copy of record generates and the download copy of record page displays. So you'll click the green arrow icon to download and save the copy of record for record purposes. And so then once you have your copy of record, it will be in a zip file format. So you'll want to open the zip file. You can right-click and open within WinZip. And then within your zip file, you can extract all the files, which will include your CDR XML file and the CDR PDF. Okay. And so next, we'll review the process of uploading an XML file into the CDR form. So in your CDR form, you can click the Upload XML button that displays in the bottom left-hand side of the page. And then this takes you to the Upload. This displays the Upload XML page. And then you can click the Upload XML file button. And then you'll search for and select the XML file you want to upload into your form and click Open. And then the XML file is uploaded into your CDR form. It'll process and then it'll display a message, hopefully successful.
So in the previous reporting period, some submitters purchased off-the-shelf tools to assist with creating the XML files. If you do that, please be careful because a lot of those applications or a lot of those software will add their own software name into the XML file, and that could cause an error when uploading. So we will be placing a draft or a demonstration XML on the CDR website once they're ready. So if you do opt to use the XML or generate your own XML, please use the schema that we provide and ensure that your schema matches that schema exactly.
Okay. So next, we'll review the process of amending a submitted CDR form. So on the CDR form you page, once you've completed a form, if you want to amend it, you would click the lock icon that displays within the action column. So then this generates an amendment confirmation message window to confirm that you want to amend your form. So you'll click the OK button. And then so this takes you to the Enter Passphrase screen. So you'll enter the passphrase of the form and click the Next button. And so then this will take you to the Amendment and Late Submission Explanation screen. So you'll enter an explanation and you can click the Save or Next button. So in a 2016 form, this page, it no longer displays until you until you want to amend your form or when the reporting deadline passes. Okay. So next, we'll actually go into a CDR 2016 form and kind of just demonstrate the pages a little bit more. You'll log in, we'll just enter as a primary authorized official. You'll click the primary authorized official link. You'll access CDR. You'll click the OK button. You'll click the forms tab or link. Okay.
one. We'll describe what this is.
Okay. So then on the CDR Form U page, you'll see that you have like a reporting year drop-down menu, so you can, by default, 2016 forms will display. So if you do want to access like a 2012 form, you would select 2012 from the reporting year drop-down menu, or you can, if you want to view all of your forms, you can select all from the reporting year drop-down menu. If you're, if you only want to look at a specific site, you can search for that site. We can look for that site in the site drop-down menu, or if you only want to see forms of a specific status, you can select that status from the status drop-down menu, and then you can see the reporting year of the site in this reporting year column. And again, you know, if you added a site and it doesn't show up when you log in, you need to scroll to the bottom and click the Refresh Form List button, and that will show any newly added sites or any sites that you've deleted. Okay, so we'll just go ahead and start the CDR form. So you'll click the site link on the site column header. This takes you to the Create Passphrase page. So again, you'll just want to create a passphrase that you'll remember. It was difficult for people to guess. And then click the next button. So then it takes you to the parent company information page, and so you can enter in your DMB number, your county or parish value. Parent company information looks okay. And then if you click the next button, this takes you to the site information page. And then on the site information page, you can also enter your site DMB number, your county or parish value. Do you want me to? And then you can also, and then you can enter in your technical contact information on the technical contact information page. Or you can copy your own CDX registration information. And then
identify the default contact.
Yeah, make sure you identify at least one a default contact by checking the default contact checkbox. You can click the next button. If you do want to enter in more than one technical contact, say you have multiple technical contacts, one for each chemical, you could, you know, select one that you previously created, or you can click Create New Contact and identify multiple technical contacts, and each one of those displays within the Company Insight Identification Information folder. So you can click the next button, continue. And then, so on the chemical identification page, you can click the search button to search for chemical. You would enter in your search values and click the search button. And then your chemical search result displays the display only field, and you can click the next button. So then this takes you to the manufacturing information page. So you can enter in your manufacturing information. Again, if you mark something, I don't know if it's here yet. Yeah. So if you mark something as CBI, you can enter in the response to your CBI substantiation questions in a pop-up window. So you can enter, save. You can enter in your 2015 production volume information, your physical form information, and then your production volume for the past reporting years. Then, if you click next, this takes you to the industrial processing and use page. And so you can enter in your industrial processing and use information you have. So you would select, the type of processor use value from this drop-down menu. You can mark the CVI if you want. You can select a value for sector, industrial function category. You can enter in the percent of production volume, the number of sites, which is a range, and the number of workers. You can enter in multiple categories and then click the next button. And then this takes you to the consumer and commercial use page, and you can also select values for the product category. From a drop-down menu, you can enter and you can select a value for, to indicate whether it will be consumer or commercial use, whether it's used in products intended for children, percent production volume, a concentration range, and then the number of commercial workers reasonably likely to be exposed. And then if you want, you can add a chemical. So then this will add another chemical folder within your navigation tree. You can identify your second chemical on the chemical identification page, and then you can sort by chemical name or date. So we'll just add a chemical really quick. Okay. So if you wanted to search for a chemical, say you added a bunch of chemicals, you can click the drop-down menu that displays, and you can type in your chemical that you're looking for, and it kind of shifts to that chemical folder. You can collapse your navigation tree or expand it. You can sort the chemicals by the date they were added and the name, which isn't very flashy because it's kind of already in order. And pick a very good example, sorry. If you add, if you want to identify a joint submission, you click the Add Joint Submission folder. You can populate information for that there. You can identify a technical contact. And then chemical identification, and enter in the information there. And you have your unique identifier you can pass on so they can create the joint form. Or you can have the option to upload the XML also, group of buttons.
If you do opt to use the XML upload, it will overwrite everything that you've previously entered. So it's better to do the XML first and then edit the data.
Right. You don't want to accidentally lose something. Yeah, that's correct.
Can you explain how the validate and the save buttons work?
Sure. So when you're actually entering in information in your form, The form will actually save the information you've entered when you click the previous or next buttons. It also validates. So if you do have like an error on one of your pages, a little message will pop up when you click next. And it will tell you, you know, which field you're missing. And then if you click validate, the application will validate your form, what fields are missing values. And then also when you submit, the submission process also validates your form. And then you can also click the save icon in the bottom action bar to save your entire form, because it's a global save also. But if you do click the location tree, that doesn't save the information you've entered. So just be aware of that. Okay. So then it will just list the error messages that you have that you need to fix before you submit. Oh, so these are actually links. So if you click on them, the application will take you to the page, where the error message originates from. So this one that I clicked said parent company DMB number is required. So it'll bring you to this page, and you're like, oh, I didn't enter in a number for my parent company. I should do that now. I need to do that now. So enter it in, and you'll fix the other errors, and you can save or validate. So we'll go back to the presentation.
So within the reporting application, there's actually a tab for resources. And within those resources, you can find links to the user guide, CDR reporting web page, and other resources. There's also resources outside, like the eCDR web, where you can submit questions for specific reporting requirements, the TSCA hotline, or if you're having an issue with your setting up your CDX account or accessing something, you can contact the CDX help desk. We'll also be having additional outreach sessions for the CDR tool. Those dates are TBD, and the slides that you have just seen in the audio will be posted to the CDR website. We are also going to be having industry testing of the CDR application. If you'd like to participate in it, it will be occurring from November 2nd to November 20th. We request that you send an email to etoscareporting@epa.gov and just simply say, I would like to participate in the industry beta testing of the CDR application. We also will send you then information for a test account so you can log in, some quick guidelines to use. And if you do participate and you find any errors or you have any comments, we request that you send those also to the eTSCA reporting website so we can keep track of them and potentially roll them in.
So at this point, we'd like to open up to any questions that you might have.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question comes from the line of John Howell.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for the informative seminar here on how to make the CDX submission of the data work. Question is related perhaps more to the data to be submitted rather than the process, so let me ask it, see if I can get a response. Besides, again, different from back in 2012, industrial processing use was only required on chemicals at the site of more than 100,000 pounds, as I recall. For 2016, that's now down to 25,000 pounds. Does that the processing and use data apply only to chemicals which you manufacture on the site in that quantity, 25,000 pounds or more, or does it apply also to other chemicals which you purchase from another supplier and then use to blend with chemicals manufactured on your site in your products? Again, so the question is, does the processing and use information, which this year is 25,000 pounds, apply only to things that you make on site or to other materials that you bring in on site?
Thank you very much for that question. This webinar really is focused on the e-reporting tool. I'm going to go ahead and answer, but I am asking everybody else to please, if you have questions that have to do with the reporting requirements themselves, please contact us at the ecdrweb@epa.gov email address, and we'll get your responses back. We'll have a future webinar where we get more into details of the reporting requirements as well. And for the question of whether you only report on chemicals that you manufacture, including import, you do not report on chemicals that you purchase and use without any manufacturer of a chemical substance.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Julie Byrne.
Hi. My question has to do with, are the authorized officials the only ones that can start the CDR report, the Form U, or can primary support do the forms?
An authorized official is needed to start and submit the form. So you need to have your authorized official begin the form and then assign a support to that form. Once that's done, the support can edit, add, and do whatever for the form and fill it out, and then the authorized official would need to come back in and actually submit it.
Okay. Can you tell us when you're going to have the XMLL form ready on the web?
It'll be in early 2016.
Okay.
We don't have an exact date.
Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. That is star one to ask a question. And your next question comes from the line of Elizabeth Decker.
Yes, thank you. My question is about passphrase, and I also am learning about PMN submissions and passphrases. So when you have a passphrase for your Form U, do you need a different one for each site that you're submitting?
No, you can reuse your passphrase for any submissions. And that's actually across submission types also. You just want to make sure that once you keep that in a very secure place.
Yeah. But then, if you enter your passphrase, wouldn't you then get a multiple of forms that you'd have to sort through and pick out if you were searching by passphrase for a form that you had been working on?
You don't search by passphrase per form. When you access a form, you'll be asked for the passphrase, but you cannot search by the passphrase.
Oh, but you access the form first and then
yes.
Enter the passphrase. Okay, great. Thank you. That helps.
Your next question comes from the line of Atea Abadora.
It's Atea Durazak here, and my question is, will it be possible to populate or even start submitting the form use before June 1st, before the start of the reporting period?
At this point, the answer to that is no. Our plan is to allow submissions beginning June 1st.
What about populating?
That is under consideration. Let me ask you back, how far before the reporting period would you be interested in being able to access the reporting tool?
Any time after, let's say, February.
So we are planning on providing access to it before the reporting period. We just don't have an exact date yet.
Okay.
And one of the things to keep in mind is because once you submit a form, then we have the information from the form and you can get access to your XML. But if you start entering the information and forget the passphrase, then you will have to start over. So just keep that in mind as you think about when you start filling out the form.
Sure. But you will provide communication as one, the tool will be available for populating and submitting earlier than June.
Yes, we will.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jenny Stokes.
Good afternoon. I have a couple of questions. The first is with respect to the XML uploads. If the upload is unsuccessful, will the program tell us where the error is, or do we need to go find that ourselves?
You will actually need to find that yourself. The system can't do a comparison between your XML and its XML.
Okay, it can't even pinpoint an area or a chemical?
No.
Okay. Disappointing, but thank you for the answer. A couple other questions with regards to once you're in the system itself, the ECDR, and you need to search for a chemical in your report, you showed us that you can search by chemical name. Can you also search by chemical cast number?
Not at this time.
Okay, and is there a way that you could display cast numbers in that left-hand column instead of chemical names?
Yeah, yes, we could probably do that.
That would be very helpful. Many chemical names are the same. They're super long, and they're the same till the very end of the name, and so only having the name to search by or to view on that left-hand pane can be problematic. So if we can display cast numbers in that left-hand pane instead of chemical names, that would be incredibly helpful.
There is also, just to let you know, on each chemical page, there is a chemical alias field where you can enter any text you would like for to describe that chemical. So if you entered, one in that field, you would see one as the folder name for that chemical.
Okay, I think I really just need cast number as the folder name, and that would be very helpful.
Okay, thank you. I'll note that.
Your next question comes from the line of Chen Shin.
Hi, I have a quick question. One is, I saw that Google Chrome was being used for the live demo. Is that kind of what you recommend, or is there like a internet browser you recommend, or one over the other, like Internet Explorer or anything like that?
I don't think we one over another. The tool is accessible through Internet Explorer, Chrome, Firefox, so you should be able to use any browser you have without problem.
Okay, last question is, I know you can upload XML and you can probably modify the responses using the web form. Once you modify, is there a way to download that information as XML the other way?
No, the XML is generated during the Chromair submission process. So you'd have to actually submit through Chromair, and then you'd be able to gather the updated XML as a copy of, out of your copy of record.
Oh, after submission, you can only download the XML. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jessica McPhee.
Good afternoon. I heard another question about when the XML would be available, and it was said early 2016. I was wondering, my first part to the question is that just the XML schema definition, or is that a sample XML?
We might be able to produce both.
Because my follow-up question is there any way, based off of the live demo, that we could get a sample XML? That way we could use that for reference.
Considering we still have additional testing to do, if we provided an XML at this point, it could be updated several times. So if you start configuring your systems to it as is, there may be chances in the future you'd have to keep reconfiguring, which is why we'd like to hold off pushing out an XML schema until we have a finalized version.
Okay, but it is possible that in 2016 we could get a sample XML and an XSD.
Yes.
Correct. Okay, thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Claire.
Hi, couple of questions. Passphrase. You're not supposed to have any special characters. If you start typing in special characters, will it just ignore them, or will it give you an error message?
It'll provide you an error message.
Spaces are okay.
Spaces are okay.
Spaces are okay. Also, this is kind of a general question, but, you know, when we fill out EPMN forms and LVE forms, we use kilograms. Are we ever going to migrate to kilograms for CDR?
I wouldn't ever say never. Right now, the regulation calls for reporting in pounds, so unless we do a regulatory change, we would prefer only having, not allowing the choice between pounds or kilograms, because that allows a chance for a mistake to be made by not selecting, you know, having to choose between the two and not.
Sure, but you require kilograms for the PMNs.
It's something that we will consider for the next time we do rulemaking.
Okay. All right. Let's see. So, in your navigation in the system, when you were filling out the U form, you used a navigation tree on the left-hand side. Can you also use the back and forward buttons that are up at the left-hand corner?
I wouldn't recommend using the back and, like, the previous buttons in the browser. I would just use the previous and the next buttons within the application. That way, you know, you make sure you're saving, you're not, like, losing anything.
Okay.
Just, yeah.
And sorry for all the questions, but this will be my last. So when you save the form, like you're in the middle of a form and you have to get out of it for whatever reason, and you save it to come back to it later, will it automatically check the form and let you know what is incomplete at that time?
No, you can just save it, and that's just a global save. It doesn't validate. If you want to know what's wrong with it before you submit, just click validate. But
okay.
Save just saves it. It doesn't identify any errors that are within your form.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Larice Fields.
Hi. If you triggered reporting for a chemical substance because of either your 2014 or your 2013 production, but your 2015 production, your total production for 2015 happens to be zero, would you enter zero for 2015 and then click NA for the rest of the form?
Yes.
Okay, so it would allow an NA for the rest of Part 2B, like where it asks for, you know, your concentration and stuff like that.
That is one thing to double check. Yes, okay. We have a consensus that yes, here, the way the reporting tool is configured, it will allow you to do that.
Okay.
So if the production volume for 2015 is zero, then it will allow you to identify that everything else is not applicable.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Susan Maletti.
Thank you. I just wanted to verify in the alias part of the naming of the chemical, you can use the CAS number for the alias. Is that not correct?
Yes, it's just an open field. So whatever you want to put in there, you can put in there.
And then you can search on the alias?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of John Grabowski.
This is John Grabowski. My question has already been answered. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Linda Santry.
Hello, thank you. My question is, can the technical contact be located outside the United States?
Yes, the technical contact can be outside the U.S.
Okay, so when it's asking for a drop-down for state, and say I'm in Canada, I won't be able to fill in a state that won't be missing data?
I mean, we can make it disabled if you select something that's non-U.S., or we can have the validation not check it if it's a non-U.S. country.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Imogene Trouble.
Yes, several of my questions have been answered. I guess I would just like to reiterate, it would be nice to be able to have the CAS number automatically put in as the folder name if possible. And then the other question I had was, you showed that the substantiation comes as a pop-up window. So when you fill that and you get out of that pop-up, do you go back to the page that you were on previously?
Yeah, it actually never leaves the page. The pop-up window appears in front of it.
Okay, that's a great improvement over the last time. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Ravi Ganti.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. Quick question on the XML again. At some point, I guess we will be getting some sort of a documentation that would guide us through how to do all this, the loading and all that, and I think someone talked about XSD and XML data format. So will you be providing, once you have finalized everything, documentation so we can give it to our IT groups?
Well, we have some use for the XML, but we can't provide anything that tells your technical group how to set up your internal systems to generate the XML.
But you will have something on the structure, how we can load it.
Yeah, well, we'll provide a sample XML.
Okay.
So, yeah, to copy you to match your systems to.
Okay, that should be good. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Kathy Martin.
Sorry, I muted my phone. I guess I have two questions. One is around the preparation of the form, and when you indicated that the authorized official needs to initiate it, do they initiate per chemical, or are they just starting a form kind of for the facility to say that the site is going to report and then the support person can enter the chemical names?
They initiate the form, not by chemical.
By chemical, okay.
For the site.
Yeah, for the site.
Okay. And then I've emailed you guys too, but I'm wondering about the detailed reporting forms and instructions. Because there's a website that would indicate 2016 instructions, but there's actually no instruction document. There's a couple of other documents.
Right.
Are we going to get a big book like we had for 2012?
Yes, you will. Right now, what we've done is 16 guidance that is on the website We have a series of fact sheets that highlight the changes from 2012 to 2016 reporting. A lot of the reporting requirements have not changed. So we do still have the 2012 reporting guidance available, and if you look at those two documents together, that will help you think about the reporting for 2016. But we will be updating all of the FAQs, the instructions manual, and we'll be posting a variety of additional fact sheets over the next several months.
Okay. So, like, those the codes that you use in reporting, I don't know what they're all – I don't have them all at my fingertips, but, like, industrial function category code and all those things, have they – are you changing any of those to add new choices, or is it going to remain the same?
None of those have been changed.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Howard Freeman.
Yes, good afternoon. Part of my question has been answered, but can you give a quick overview of what's changed since the 2012 CDR?
Yeah, there's basically two things that have changed. One is the reporting volume, the threshold. For 2012, we had a 100,000-pound threshold. That has now been dropped to 25,000 pounds, which applies for all of the information, with the exception of chemicals that have been are subject to another TSCA action. And for those chemicals, the reporting threshold is 2,500 pounds. So that's one change. The second change is that you are reporting for previous. The total production volume for the previous years since the last reporting. So you're reporting not only for 2015, but also the production volume for 2014, 2013, and 2012. And for those 3 years, it's production volume only. However, when you identify whether or not you're going to need to report, you look at each of those years, and if in any one of those 4 years you exceed either the 25,000 pounds or the 2,500 pounds, whichever is applicable, then you've triggered reporting for that chemical.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Rosalie Zabaldi.
Okay, hello. I had a question on the XML. Is only the AO going to have the privilege to be able to do that, or is that something the support registrant will be able to do?
Do you mean upload the XML or download the XML to copy of record?
Both.
I believe if you're assigned to the submission, I believe, and I'm not, we can always get back to you. I believe that if a support is assigned to the submission, they can download the copy of record, and they can upload it if they have a copy of it.
No.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I was mistaken on that.
Okay. So the support person, they can't download the copy of record. What they can do is they can edit it, and I think they can upload the XML. But the only person who can download the copy of record in the XML file is the primary authorized official.
Okay, but the support registrant will be able to upload the XML.
Correct.
Okay, I have another question. Two more questions. So I think I heard that the CDX will only keep the last submitted CDR. So when the form U for 2016 is created, the 2012, what happens to that?
No, the 2012 is the 2012 submission, so that will stay. We're talking about changes, amendments to this particular submission. So in 2016, if you hit submit your form, and then the next day make a change to it and submit again, we will overwrite your first submission, the first of the 2016 submissions. Your 2012 submission we are retaining. Does that answer your question?
I think so. So the 2012 submission will be accessible, for example, in the future. You can make an amendment if something needs to be amended.
You'll have a separate form U for your 2012 submissions and your 2016 submissions and any future submissions. And
okay.
The overwriting that happens for the copy of record is by site by year.
Okay. I think I understand that. All right. So then one of the other questions I had was about, you know, the passphrase issue, and if you forget that, you know, you indicated that there would be some sort of reset process that somebody would have to go through in order, I guess I'm looking to see if there's guidance available on that or some good instructions on what happens when you do forget your passphrase, because we're not able to find anything yet on the website for that situation.
Yes, we can put together some guidance for that.
Yeah, I think that's really, it would be really helpful if that was made available for folks who, you know, who just don't have the passphrase anymore, and
but
what happens and what the options are. And one of the proposals I had too is, I understand that if you do forget your passphrase and you can't access, you know, and you have to go through a reset process and you have to start all over again, and presumably this would be like for a 2012 amendment. It does sound like EPA still has access to that information. It's just that, you know, and if we had access to that information from a PDF standpoint, it almost seems like there could be another option where if an amendment needed to be made or some edit needed to be made to a former CDR, that maybe a written or an extra field or application in CDX could be made available to make a specific amendment as a workaround, rather than having to restart and or lose, you know, information. You know, that's assuming that a site would have maintained their PDF information and could do that.
Yeah, and that's kind of why we recommend that you, after you've submitted, you download that copy of record, because then if something does happen, you'll have the XML file and PDF, so you could just go back in, upload that XML, and you would have the last submission that you made. So then you'd only have to change the one or the two or whatever, however many data elements, and then resubmit.
Oh, well, now that's interesting. So if you have that XML download, are you saying then that passphrase is somehow encrypted in there and that it would...
I'm sorry. I'll walk you through the process. So if you lose your passphrase, what needs to happen is we actually will reset your site. What that would do, it means that you would no longer be able to access that form U, your original form U. You would see a new site that you would have to begin your new form U on for, say, the 2012 reporting period. You'd have to repopulate from scratch. However, if you had downloaded your copy of record, you could upload that XML and basically have all the information already populated.
I see. Okay. Okay, that's a good advantage. Okay, and one last question then on the passphrase. So for 2016, when we start a new form U, is that going to be a new passphrase, or would you, it would be a new passphrase, or would you use the same passphrase as before in 2012?
That's completely up to you.
Okay, so we could use whatever was used in the past as well for the 2016. Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of John Kowalski.
Yes, good afternoon. I have two questions, the first of which has already been answered in part. But to clarify, will there be printable instruction manual available, or will that be available only within the reporting tool itself?
There will be a printable instruction manual available. It'll be epa.gov/CDR.
But it's not available as yet.
It is not.
Okay, and then thank you. My second question is, will EPA be providing lists of chemicals subject to the 2,500-pound reporting threshold, not eligible for certain full or partial exemptions, and not eligible for the small manufacturer exemption?
Yes. One of the fact sheets that is currently on the website provides some additional information about those particular chemicals, and we will be providing access to a comprehensive list prior to the beginning of the submission period. It's the way the regulation is written, it affects any chemicals that are subject as of June 1st, 2016. So if there's a chemical, say, that has a SNR on it that is sunsetting in March, that by the time you get to June, that chemical is no longer subject to a TSCA action and therefore would fall under the 25,000-pound threshold instead of the 2,500. So because of that, we're not able to provide the full list until right before the submission period.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Mary Marrero.
Thank you all for presenting today. I appreciate the early update and information. My first question is about the 2,500-pound threshold. I think based on the last response, there's nothing in the system that's going to identify a chemical as a lower threshold, meaning in the ECDR there'll be no automatic knowledge from that tool that it is subject to the lower threshold. Is that correct?
You didn't see it in the reporting tool, but when you do your search in SRS, the system will respond and let you know if you potentially are at a lower reporting threshold. There will be a message that pops up once you enter your chemical to provide you with more information.
Okay, great. And I wanted to kind of give, I guess, maybe a third plug for using the CAS number as the main identifier. I helped gather some of the industry input on CDR, and that was one of the most common and main requests. Some companies have over 200 substances at one site, and renaming all of them using the alias is pretty significant, and I think most people who actually do the reporting tend to focus on that number versus the chemical name. So just wanted to give another plug for that.
Okay, thank you, Mary.
Yeah, and then one more piece. I think I heard you say that there's no, when we use the validation tool, there's going to be nothing to tell us where if we happen to make a mistake or an error. One of the things I remember from the last time is we couldn't differentiate between our own error and, like, the system just wasn't operating properly at that moment. Is there going to be any way to help us understand rather than trying to call in to find out if there's a system issue versus our own validation issue or our own system problem?
When you need to make sure that your pop-up blocker is not on, because when you validate, the system will actually produce a pop-up window listing any validation errors you have, and each link or each validation error will actually be a link to the page where the error is. So,
That's different.
I think the earlier comment was the question about the XML and identifying if the XML upload fails, identifying.
Oh, yeah, it was. You're right. And that was another area where we had a problem telling the difference between the ECDR not functioning and our own problem.
Mm-hmm. There's an error in the application. It'll be a lot bigger. It'll be like a null pointer. It's pretty obvious. There's like a huge red circle with like a red exclamation point, and that means that something is wrong in the test environment. You can take a screenshot of that and send it to us.
Okay.
A validation error, like something wrong with like a value or content within your form, will show up as like a smaller error message in a little red box either on the page if you're using the next or the, and the previous buttons or within the separate validation pop-up window. So
okay.
I think it's pretty clear.
And will we be using for the pilot, if we volunteer, is the schema use going to be part of that?
That's a good question.
I'm going to hope yes.
Yeah, so the text environment is a non-CBI environment. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's one of the problems with, like, using your past XML to be able to upload into it.
Yeah, you could potentially create a submission, upload your XML, or download your XML, delete some chemicals and re-upload an XML to see if it's catching everything.
Okay.
But I don't think we're going to have any pre-made XMLs for upload.
Okay. So we would have to kind of come up with our own to be able to try that.
Yes. Well, you could. So if you did during testing, if you went through and say created a form U with two chemicals. You could then go in, copy, you know, submit it, create your copy of record, download your copy of record that contains the XML, go back into your submission, delete those two chemicals, and upload the XML, and the two chemicals should repopulate.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Carol Coleman.
I believe all my questions have been answered, but thank you very much for the time and the information today.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Betsy Duncan.
Yes, hello. My question has to do with, is it possible if your 2016 report for a site has no change except for the production volume and then the addition of the previous 3 years, if there's no other change, such as downstream use information, worker exposure, there's no way to really be able to use that information and pull it up into a 2016 report. Is that correct? You have to rebuild from scratch?
Well, what you should be able to do would be to download or use your 2012 XML file from
mm-hmm.
your copy of record and upload that, and that would pre-populate the matching fields.
And then just go in and add the additional parts?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes. And if you do that, make sure that that's the first thing that you do, because
mm-hmm.
if you previously entered any information into the 2016, it will get overwritten.
Excellent. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Fred Marashi.
Yes, I was wondering if you could expand maybe walk me through the sequence of steps for assigning a technical contact or a support contact.
Sure.
Yes, hold on 1 minute, please, so we can pull up the...
So can you see the screen?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Sure. So when you log in, you would click on the user management tab or link, and then actually you would select the reporting year of the site that you want to assign from the reporting year drop-down menu. And once you select that, that enables the site drop-down menu. So you'll select a site that you want to assign. And then that will display, you know, your support users in the unassigned kind of field. And then you'll select the support or supports you want to assign to that form. And then you'll click the Add link, and that moves into the assigned field set.
So the support people have already gone through and signed up.
Yeah.
So the name is there for that site already.
Right. When the support person signs up, what they'll have to do is they'll have to identify you as their primary authorized official, and they'll also have to register for the same organization.
Okay.
And, you know, you want to do that by organization ID, just to make sure. And then, you know, if you did that correctly, then the support name will show up on the user management page.
Excellent. Okay.
And then...
just real quick, so you're talking about a support, like someone to go in and add data, not a technical support, like someone just to call and get information?
Okay. That was my other question, actually, the difference between a technical support and a support. I was interested to see the assignment of a support where they actually go and add data.
Okay.
But then what's the difference between that and the technical support?
Well, so the technical support is just the information collected for that is the person who would be contacted if questions arose concerning the chemical. They don't have to ever touch the form U. They're just the contact.
Okay.
But the user management page is where you would assign individuals to actually populate or edit the form U.
Okay. Okay, so technical support doesn't really have to go, it just has to be identified by the primary authorized official. They don't need to go and actually sign up in CDX. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, yep.
Well, as long as they're not going to do anything with the form.
Correct, yes. I understand, yeah. All right, very good. Thank you.
Your next question. Go ahead, sir.
Just real quick. So then once you're done, remember to save.
Yeah, so click the save button. Make sure that you save, kind of like we said, and then the support name will show up in the assigned field set. So that's how you know it was successful.
Okay, next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Pam Mason.
Yes, hello. May be self-evident now, but our facility is brand new and did not even operate until 2013, so should I report zero or NA for 2012?
Yeah, I would think you would just report zero.
Okay. Again, just a simple question now, but thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Susan Maletti.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering about the previous year's volume. Is the numbering scheme for that going to be 20A is 2014, B is 13 and 12, or is it not matter? I guess in your XMLs, you just identified the year, the previous year.
I think within the XML, how are they distinguished?
In the previous XML, it just said report past production volume, and then it said year, and you entered 2010. And then production volume in pounds. So you just identified it and then the pounds that went with that for the XML. But I was wondering on your, you went very quickly through that screen. I didn't actually see the numbering scheme for the 2014. Is that 20A? And 20.
Right, it's 20A, 20.B, and 20.C for the past reporting. But
is A 14 and then C
no.
is 12?
Previous reporting
year.
Oh, it's only 2B 20.
It doesn't have a number there. It's just 20B and it doesn't say A, B, or C. But I guess the first one is 14.
That's a good question. We'll have to take a look and see what it's going to look like in the schema.
Okay, great. And I also would like to emphasize the others. Several people have commented that being able to identify the CAS number and sort by that without having to enter, and it's very important for sites that have a large number of chemicals. So that's very important. And the I would also emphasize as soon as possible that the CDX is open for entering data prior to the submission date of June 1st. Again, when there are lots of chemicals at a site, a lot of times it takes a lot of reiterations to get the information to validate. So if the CDX can be open before June 1st, as early as possible, would be very good for sites that have a lot of data to enter.
Okay, we have noted that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Claire Scott.
Hi. So I'm feeling a little bit confused about the roles here. I've just recently, you know, been through your EPMN thin client presentations. I am not the person that normally would submit or in the past has submitted things. I've prepared all the forms. But now with the EPMN roles, I'm going to have to sign up as an authorized official in order to populate the fields and the forms. Is that also true in the CDR? It seems to me that I don't have to be an authorized official in order to populate these forms.
So for CDR, you don't have to be an authorized official to populate the forms. You just need to be registered as a support, and then you have to have the primary authorized official assign you to the form.
Okay.
And actually for the Section 5 PMNs, you can also, there's multiple roles that we don't have for CDR. There's also an agent consultant role if you're not with the same company. And then there's also a support role associated with the Section 5. So you should not, if you're not the authorized official, you should not need to register as an authorized official.
Okay, so here's my, we're going to have to go in. I prepare all our LVE forms, all right? So I'm going to have to go in before January, whatever, and re-register with CDX as a secondary authorized official or something like that. I've got it all written down. And that will be site-specific for EPMN. Do I have to go in and re-register with CDX for eCDR?
No, you just need to be registered under the CSPP data flow, and that will allow you access to all of the TSCA applications, like the Section 5, CDR, et cetera.
So I don't have to change my role then?
No, the only thing you may have to do would be to manage your account and add roles to it, but you don't need to re-register every time.
Okay. All right, I think that answers it. Oh, no, one more question. So since I was not the primary authorized official who submitted the 2012 CDR, even though I prepared it and I sent it to the authorized official to submit, will I be able to download that XML to take a look at it and see if we want to use it again?
No, you need the primary authorized official to download that copy of record.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And you have a follow-up question from the line of Chen Chin.
Hi. I have a question regarding resubmissions. So let's say, for example, you originally submitted, with 10 chemicals, and later you may need to amend 5 of them. In that case, I just want to confirm the process is correct. You would, if you do the XML, you would re-upload all 10 of them, except you would just amend the 5, and then you would just resubmit the all 10 chemicals, but only 5 of them would be with the different information, correct information. Is that correct, or can you just upload 5 chemicals that you need to amend the information to, and you, if you upload that, will the other five chemicals where you didn't have to make the change, would CSPP remember the original submission for the five, or would it, like, if you just only submit the five amended ones, it would just cancel out the five originals? I don't know if that makes sense, but I hope my question makes sense.
So the first thing, I wouldn't upload the XML unless you're doing a brand new submission, because it will overwrite everything. If you're going to amend a submission, which is one that's already been submitted, what you need to do is you go to your form screen, and on the far right column to the site name is a little lock icon. Once it's submitted, you'll see a lock icon. You click on that icon, and you'll have to enter your passphrase, as you see on the screen. And what that will do is that will actually unlock that submission. Then you click on the site link, and that will open up the submission again, and then you can jump to whatever chemical you need to adjust, make the changes, and then resubmit. Oh, I'm sorry, and you also have to do the explanation for amendment. But you just go in, and then you select the chemical from the navigation tree, make your changes, and resubmit. You don't need to use any XML upload for that.
Okay, and I guess just then it follows, then I think that, let's say if you do that, and let's say, you know, you found out later that one of the chemicals did not have to be reported originally, in that case, what would you do? Like, how would you resubmit so that the one chemical that you didn't have to report but that you submitted, how can you delete that out? Is there a process for that?
Yeah, so if you look on the screen right now, so you do the same process of unlocking your submission, and in the navigation tree underneath each chemical folder or within each chemical folder, there's a little red X that says remove.
Okay.
You need to click that X to remove the chemical, and then you'd need to resubmit it.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Imogene Treble.
Yes, and I think you may have answered this. In the PMN, for the new thin client PMN, there is the consultant agent role. I just wanted to confirm that is not available in the CDR.
No, that is not available in CDR at this point.
Is there any thought to making it available for future?
Potentially for the future, but adding that in would take a lot of work to recode the application. And I don't think we have the time for that at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And you do have a question from the line of Susan Maletti.
Yes, hi. I wanted to check that when you do have to submit a correction, any primary authorized official can do that. It doesn't have to be the same primary authorized official that submitted before that can unlock it and resubmit. Is that correct?
That's correct, as long as they have the passphrase for the form.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. That is star 1 to ask a question. And your next question comes from the line of Tony Tintello.
Yeah, hi. I have a couple of questions. Can a primary authorized official be a non-U.S. citizen living in the United States?
There is no citizenship requirement for any of the roles.
Okay. And if I have registered as a primary authorized official under the TSCA Section 5, the EPMN thin client, does that carry over to this and vice versa?
Thank you for calling the conferencing center. An operator will be joining you momentarily. Please be prepared to provide your conference ID number and any additional information required.
Hello?
Hosting this conference call. After all information has been gathered, your line will either be placed on hold or joined to the conference.
Good afternoon. May I have your conference ID number, please? Ladies and gentlemen, this is the operator. I apologize, but there will be a slight delay in today's conference. Please hold, and the conference will resume momentarily. Thank you for your patience.
So it seems like we had a little technical issue, and we're disconnected, but we're back if anyone has additional questions.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. And your question comes from the line of Tony Tintello.
I guess I was the cause of the cutoff. I don't know. anyway, I was going to ask if you were registered as an authorized official for the thin client of VPMN. Do we have to do anything to be registered as the support personnel for CDR reporting?
Joining you momentarily. Please be prepared to provide your conference ID number and any additional information required by the company hosting this conference call. After all information has been gathered, your line will either be placed on hold or joined to the conference.
Good afternoon. May I have your conference ID number, please? Ladies and gentlemen, this is the operator. I apologize, but there will be another slight delay in today's conference. Please hold, and the conference will resume momentarily. Thank you for your patience.
Maybe someone else can ask Tony a question.
Okay. I guess we're having some problems staying connected. I'm sorry. So if you have any questions, please let us know.
And you do have a question from the line of Claire Scott.
So my question is very similar to Tony's. I'm still not clear on the roles and... So here's the situation. We're a small company. I do all the PMN forms, but in order to access the SIN client, I have to now be an authorized official. So I'm going to register that way with the one site we have, but I want to be a support registrant for CDR. Is that possible?
Yes. All you need to do is... So you need to have a primary authorized official under the CSPP flow that you'd be the support for. Then you'd need to add the support role to your CDX account. And when you do that, you'll need to identify the, I think it's the user ID of the primary authorized official you'd like to be linked to.
Okay. So I can be in two different roles in
yes.
the same CSSP program or CSPP or whatever it is.
Yes.
Okay. I think that's what Tony was trying to ask. I'm hesitant to have him try and ask again because I
Funny, if you could just send us an email.
Yeah. But I think that is what he was trying to ask. Do I have to re-register? I'm already registered for the CSSP, so I don't have to re-register. I just have to add a role?
Exactly. You can hold every role within the CSPP data flow in your account.
Okay, so I'm going to register first for the SIN client because that's due first. I'm going to be a secondary authorized official, whatever.
It wouldn't be a secondary authorized official is for joint submissions. That means you're supplying information for someone else's Section 5 submission. You would need to register as a primary.
Okay, a primary.
Yep.
I knew it was an authorized official. I've never had that role before. Because in order to fill out the form, which my boss does not want to do, and let him submit it, I've got to be an authorized official. So I'm going to set up the site. I'm going to register as the authorized official. He's going to register as an authorized official. And in CDR, he's going to pick me as the support.
Exactly.
Okay. That's my question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Stan Miller.
Our company has gone through a number of name changes over the years, and so the names that are currently in the CDR are not the current ones. How do you go about changing those?
So when you say, like, the names in the CDR need to be changed, do you mean, like, the site names or your organization name is changed?
The site names have changed as well as the organization.
Okay. So what you want to do is you would want to add your new organization name, and then under that new organization name, you would add the new site that you have also. If you can't find that site, then you can add it as a new site. About the site.
About adding, adjusting.
They can do that within the application.
Okay.
Now.
You could also contact FRS, as they manage the facility information.
Yeah. You don't have to contact.
So, yeah, you can contact FRS, or you can edit it within the CDX accounts.
Okay. As what role do you have to modify the company name?
You don't have to have an
organization name. You're going to have to re-register.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're
right.
When you change the organization, you'll need to re-register because it's a new organization. So you'd have to submit the new ESA or go through the LexisNexis process again.
Okay, but it's only a name change.
I think it's because it's a new name, it'd probably get a new identification number, and that would make it a separate.
You can use the same CDX account. You just need to add a new organization to the account.
Right.
Did you hear that? You can still use your CDX account. You just need to add the new organization.
Okay.
And then you'd have to go through and update the facility information.
To your new organization name.
If you would like this in a more comprehensive response, if you can send an email to ecdrweb@epa.gov, we can get a response back to you.
Okay. I can do that. Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And your next question comes from the line of Joanne Houck.
Hi. If we want to have a consultant help us to compile our CDR, and there is no agent consultant type role, what would we have the consultant register as?
I would probably recommend having them register as a support, and then you just assign them to the Form U or Form Us that they need to populate.
Okay, thanks.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1. On your telephone keypad, that is star 1 to ask a question. Hold while I transcribe your first question, please. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Caller, your line is open. Please state your name. Caller, your line is open. Can you please state your first and last name, please?
Tony, I think they might be muted. We can't hear any of them.
If your line is on mute, can you please unmute it?
Neha?
Okay, and what's your question?
Hi, my question, can you kind of just recap the different roles that are available in this ECDR web? It sounds like authorized official and the support role are the two primary roles, and the limitations of each role.
So the primary authorized official has no limitations. They can create, populate, edit, and submit a Form U. A support needs to register and be linked to a primary authorized official and then be assigned to a Form U. Once that's done, they can add and edit the information, but they cannot submit. There's also the secondary authorized official who would basically has the authorized official roles, but for a joint submission, which this would be a company that's supplying a trade chemical to a primary authorized official, and doesn't want the primary authorized official to know what they're submit or what they're sending them. And then there's the support role for the secondary authorized official also.
And do the both the authorized official and the support role, they have to submit a paper electronic a paper signature to get the access?
No, the primary authorized official can go through what's called LexisNexis, which is a third-party authenticator. If they do not pass LexisNexis, then they need to submit a paper ESA. The support does not need to go through that process as they're basically approved and assigned by the authorized official.
Okay. And I don't recall if is authorized official term specific to the eCDR web or more to the CDR regulation? Is it defined in the CDR regulation or if it's specifically as created for this web submittal purpose?
No, that's actually a role that we have for the CSPP data flow. It extends outside of the CDR submissions.
Okay. So there may be criteria that will have to be met to assign someone as an authorized official.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. That is star one to ask a question. And you do have a question from the line of Claire Scott.
Sorry, I came up with another one, and it still has to do with these roles. In the new SIM client, and this is what's confusing me, is the new SIM client, you can have more than one primary authorized official. Can you have more than one primary authorized official in the CDR as well?
Yes. Yes, you can.
Okay. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And there are no further questions at this time.
Okay, well, thank you, Tony. If anyone else has any questions, you can please submit them to ecdrweb@epa.gov, and we'll respond to them. Other than that, we really appreciate your participation and all your questions. We're looking forward to you participating in the beta testing of the tool, and hope you have a wonderful afternoon.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines.